So I guess we can start. We're just a tiny crew. So we were going to meet outside today, and winter came back. it just felt a little chilly. So, and there's a chance it might rain. So we just thought that we'd do one more week inside. So we do know of a few people who would like to come but don't feel safe yet inside, and so that's the rationale for meeting outside. And we'll just call it every week. If it seems like it's beautiful outside, that's what we'll do. And if it's too hot or too cold or too buggy or too wet, we'll come inside. So it's a little easier to do it inside. So anyway, Lord be with us, and I want to honor you today. So, and I had a different plan. It didn't quite work out. So I'm thinking just do a couple of the songs that I've been trying to write, songs that go along with the topics that we're studying in the service. And so it's just been sort of a personal challenge. And so I have one song that I've done here a couple of times, or did with Zoe, that she wrote, which is, and it's the idea that when she wrote it was a bright fire in the middle, and approaching from any angle, you can see the fire and give honor. And that, I thought that was really neat. And so I've been trying to do the same thing, trying to write songs that no matter if you have your belief system nailed down or not, that you could enter in and with all of your heart sing about goodness. So and in my case too, I'm trying to write directly out of the scriptures that we're looking at. So anyway, I'll do one of Zoe's and one of mine, and then I'll save the other one of mine till after. Don't you hate it when you reach in your pocket and you get the wrong thumb pick? The wrong flat pick. Don't you hate that? So Zoe calls this song, this is the most familiar one, I think. Zoe calls this Sky Quilt. And I call on the blue sky to wrap round your shoulders. I call on the blue sky to wrap right round you. I call on the blue sky to wrap round your shoulders. I call on the blue sky. Call on the sunset to rest on your shoulders. I call on the sunset to wrap right around you. I call on the moonlight to wrap around your shoulders. I call on the sunrise to rest on your shoulder. I call on the sunrise to wrap right round you. I call on the blue sky to wrap round your shoulders. I call on the blue sky to wrap right round you. Thank you.
shoulders, I call on the blue sky to wrap right around you. I call on the sunrise to rest on your shoulders. I call on the sunrise to wrap right around you. I call on the blue sky to rest on your shoulders. I call on the blue sky to wrap right around you.
The one that I did was, so we're thinking about John chapter 1 and about in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And I've been taken again with the idea of making, with makers. Zoe really is the one who told me what a beautiful concept this is, to be people that are makers. And it occurred to me that we're all makers because God's the ultimate maker. So
we are all makers because you're a maker. We all have meaning because you are. We have compassion because it's your nature. It's who you are. It's who you are. We all are makers because you're stars. Our hearts grow tender to care for each other because you are, because you are. We are all makers because you're a maker. We all have meaning because you are. We have compassion because it's your nature. Because you're a maker.
Let's just do prayers. So I planned this service to be outside, so no PowerPoint. But I have notes. The last little bit, I've been talking about John chapter 1. And I've been trying to say that there's some evidence that the early church wasn't sure how to take, well, we know for sure, for 300, 400 years they discussed it. But they weren't sure who Jesus was. There was a lot of controversy about who Jesus is. And that continued on for centuries. And all the theologians in the various parts of the empire, the Greek side, the Eastern side, or the Latin side, the Western side, they all discussed it and they had councils and they tried to figure it out. How is Jesus both human and divine? What does that mean? And John's gospel is the gospel that speaks the clearest about the divinity of Jesus. It seems to be the major focus of this gospel. And even there, we don't know exactly how to blend the human and the divine nature of Jesus. Hiya. Hi, come in. So even there, it's a something. And so last time we talked about, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And we stopped there, and I said, what does that mean? You know, in the beginning was the Word. We didn't talk about this last time, but the word logos in Greek, that's what word is, logos. And we use that word ton in English. You know, we use it there's a form part of it in theology, anthropology, zoology. There's the whole idea of word or meaning was actually an ancient Greek way to speak about God. But it was an amazing concept of God. It was like God as the rational principle that controlled everything, but not a personal God. It wasn't like a God that you worship. So in John chapter 1, when John begins the gospel by saying, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and then in a few verses, in verse 14, says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. It's like taking something that all the hearers in the ancient world would probably have agreed with at first, and then completely shocking them. It'd be a little bit like walking, I suppose a Christian missionary walking into Mecca and saying, in the beginning was Allah. And everybody would go, yeah, of course. And then you'd say, but Allah has a son. And you'd go, what? That can't be. So it's like it's an incredible shift. So last time, I think we did talk about the Jewish connection, because the word begins in the beginning, and that just speaks so much about Genesis 1. You hear the same echoes, in the beginning, in the beginning. So we know there's a Greek connection to this because it's using the word logos, and we know there's a Hebrew connection because it's using the phrase in the beginning. So then I asked you, you know, what do you think it means, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God? And we had some wonderful responses. Does anybody remember any of them? Like, what does it mean to you that this gospel was the clearest definition of the divinity of Christ ever given is in John's gospel? And although even there, as I say, it's hard to figure out how human and divine work together. So it's going to be centuries of talk. And not necessarily that everybody got it right all the time. That's my way of thinking of it. But what does it mean that this gospel wants to begin with, in the beginning was the Word? Anybody have any remembrance of ideas that came up last week, or some new ideas now?
All right, you mean God to begin with.
That it all has to, it's the beginning.
Yeah.
In the beginning is Word. I think I remember that Walt said meaning. That in the beginning is meaning. If there's Word, that represents meaning. I think Mark spoke about one word somehow giving birth to all the other languages, all the other words. I think if there's a word that's at the beginning, what it signifies is a desire to communicate. And that means a desire for a relationship. So meaning, communication, imagination, order, rationality. Because remember, in the Hebrew background, it's in the beginning, the spirit broods over the deep and takes a world of chaos that's unformed and unfilled, and it gives it life and structure. And that's exactly what I think the author of John is trying to say. In the beginning, the maker with imagination gives form and fills this imagined thing that is now being made. So it's pretty incredible. It speaks of longing for, it speaks of rationality, it speaks of order, it speaks of goodness, it speaks of meaning, it speaks of relationship. So there's a lot packed into this one word, right? Okay.
With God, I never thought there was no beginning. I thought that was on and on and on. God.
I think so too. But I think it's hard to know how God works. This is a big problem for us. Is it's like a flea trying to understand an elephant.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't say that with disparaging sense of, you know, I'm happy for the flea. I'm happy to be who we are. But I don't think we have the capacity to understand God, do we?
Yeah.
You know, but I think some people think that in the beginning means in the beginning of God. But other people think it's no, just like you said. No, God's always been there.
Yeah,
but this is God at the beginning of us. God at the beginning of our solar systems and our galaxies and planets. And so anyway, the great verse is going to be chapter 1, verse 14, where it says, "And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we've seen his glory. The glory is of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." But before you get to verse 14, there's verse 12 and verse 13. It says, "But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God." So Jesus is being presented to us as the Son of God. And hidden in here is this awareness that we all can become children of God. And so what I've been trying to do is to balance perspectives that I think were in the ancient church before it was all figured out. I think that there were different ways of looking at Jesus, trying to put his humanity and his divinity together. And the way that makes the most sense to me is that Jesus is not eternal in his humanity. It's the divinity of God that fills him completely. And that's just the way that I've been thinking of it in recent years. And so my belief is that Jesus is the perfectly presented servant, prophesied and willing and able to be completely submissive, to be so full of the Spirit that when you look at him, you can say, the human Jesus did that, or you could say, the eternal God did that, and both are perfectly accurate. That's how I've been seeing it. And so apparently, Jesus and the meaning of John's gospel, and really the meaning of the other gospels, the other perspectives too, is that this also can be for us. That we also can share in this. That we also can be children of God, as Jesus is Son of God in his submission and filling with the Spirit. So the more that we learn to submit and the more that we learn to flow with the Spirit, then we too can be children of God as far as we can grow into. I think it's a pretty exciting concept. So the key thing is the declaration, though, that Jesus became flesh and dwelt among us. And I think anybody that's ever read John chapter 1 in Eugene Peterson's The Message will love this verse the best. "The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out, true from start to finish. So beautifully said. So the Word became flesh and blood, moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out, true from start to finish. So Word, which is eternal spirit, fills Jesus, the human vessel, and shows us how it can be done. Humans can be full of God. I said last week that behind all these words is the belief that the perfect marriage between matter and spirit took place in Jesus. The perfect marriage of matter and spirit. Maybe I should have said that the other way around. Of spirit and matter took place. And this reminds me of the great Raphael painting. You know, the painting called School of Athens, which is in the Vatican. And it's near, just before you get to the Sistine Chapel. And there's a picture of Plato and Aristotle and all the ancient Greek philosophers that grew out of the Italian Renaissance. And here is Raphael's painting, and in it, he's got Plato in the center of the picture pointing up, and he's got Aristotle beside him pointing down. And what it means is Plato believed that the ultimate goodness was spiritual reality, or idea, and Aristotle thought the ultimate reality was material. And it makes me think that, well, I know several people that have said this, you can almost go through history and see it as a tennis match between a focus on spirit or a focus on matter. Thomas Cahill calls it a tennis match. Another man named Arthur Herman wrote an entire book and said, if you look at Western civilization, you can see that during this period, people are focusing more on Plato's thought and they're producing art and mysticism. During this period, they're focusing more on Aristotle's thought, they're becoming scientists. So it's such an interesting thing to look at. Do you focus on what the material world is here, or do you focus on the spiritual world? And we know that for about 1,000 years in Christendom, one of the greatest ways to celebrate Christian life was in monasteries. People that were serious about living for God wanted to find a monastery where they could devote themselves completely. Before that, they did it in caves in the desert. So it's like people said, the main thing that we should do to please God is to focus on spirit. We want to put our bodies down. We'll even put our bodies through hardship. We'll fast. Sometimes we'll wear hair shirts or chains around our... So we'll even be trying to put our flesh down so we don't think about our fleshly desires. All we want to do is focus on spirit. And then you can come along and you go, really, is that how you should be in the world but not of it? Because that's one of the scripture texts. We're supposed to be in the world, but not of it. But we've got a history of people who have thought that the way to please God the best was to focus most on spirit. But then we have societies that seem to forget about spirit altogether. And it's just as though they just are completely lost in their quest to acquire more and more material things. And it seems like they don't know that they could become children of God. They don't know that they could be full of spirit. And it's like they give up on that. And so they're not being transformed. They're not flowing with grace. They're not learning how to bring justice into the world. They're living in selfish chaos, in a darkness, because their focus is only on matter. So we have some that are focused on matter. We have some that are focused on spirit. And we have an expression that comes from the ancient world. You're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. That one actually happened before Christianity. The first time that we know that story came out, it was Thales, who was the ancient Greek philosopher, and he became brilliant at studying the stars. So brilliant, in fact, that he was a little frustrated because people, well, this maybe because of this story. He's studying the stars, and he falls into a ditch, and it's a servant girl who says, oh, Thales, you're so heavenly-minded, you're no earthly good. And then to sort of demonstrate that the man of mind could do whatever he wanted, I don't know how he did this, nobody knows how he did this, but he correctly prophesied an eclipse, and he figured out that the next year there was going to be a bumper crop of olives. And so what he did was in the off season, he bought up all of the olive presses or rented them all. And then When it really was a bumper crop, it was ripe, there was a huge bumper crop of olives. He charged exorbitant prices for the olive presses, and he became wealthy overnight. And he said, not that I care about this, I just want to show you. I could do this if I wanted to. So we have this sort of quest, you know, this teasing idea. What do we focus on, matter or spirit, all through history, even before Christianity, and in Greek philosophers, and their influence continues in the Christian era. And I'm thinking that all of our sacraments are an attempt to find the bridge between spirit and matter, the communion. You know how it's been thought of over the years, but it's something material that's meant to embrace a spiritual reality, right? And that's what the Gothic cathedrals were. That's what the churches were. It was meant to be an expression of spirit in matter. And I told you not too long ago that in the Middle Ages, there were people that even would build their apartments onto the walls of churches, and they would go through a funeral service and live their entire life as people of prayer in as part of the church wall. Maybe they would have two little rooms as an apartment. And one of the most famous ones is Julian of Norwich. And she has a window open to be able to celebrate the Mass with the people in church. And she also has a window open to the street, as people can come to her for spiritual advice, which they did. So she's like a living icon of this desire to find the bridge between spirit and matter. But I think that the best bridge that ever existed is Jesus. I think Jesus is the perfect marriage of spirit and matter. And I think that his life is a calling for us to also become the place where spirit and matter meet. So I want to ask you, in your experience, what do you think it's looked like in groups that you've been a part of, or in society, or things you've read, anywhere at all? What does it look like when somebody becomes too focused on spirit? Because, I mean, this might seem pretty abstract, but I really think what we're trying to do is set a compass so that we can live well. So, yeah.
Maybe when they aren't seeing or being corrected by the evidence of what actually happened to them.
Okay. Maybe when their idea is so strong that the evidence doesn't touch it.
Right.
So when somebody believes a big lie. When somebody can be so carried away by their idea that all the evidence to the contrary makes no difference whatsoever, that would be a focus too much on spirit. And that would be a great example that's not necessarily in the church. It could happen in the church, but it could happen anyway. Isn't that a wonderful example? Okay, what's another example? What's an example you've seen in Christian living or in church living where focus has been too much on spirit?
I can think of one individual who...
Maybe speak a little bit louder, or take your mask off for a sec. Or,
yeah. I can think of one individual who, out of good motive, tried to be godly and spend a lot of time in spiritual quest, but became irrelevant to her family and really lost her family eventually over that, because they just saw her.
She didn't cook supper because she was reading the Bible.
Yeah. They just saw her as weird, and so there became estrangement there, because she was of this far belief, and they were trying to live normal lives, and they couldn't see
her family.
They couldn't see the marriage of the two.
Her family wanted normal life. She was so convinced that spirit was more important that she devoted her time and didn't even mix in to family activities.
We actually used to say that about her. So heavenly minded, no words.
Okay. What's another example? What have you seen where spirit took over? Where spirit is just too much? It's too great a focus on spirit.
When we lived in Colombia, Mark was involved in teaching inductive Bible study to church pastors and leaders,
who had never had any theological training, but were leading churches. Mm. And so there was one church that was pretty far out there from a charismatic perspective, and they just did everything according to prophecies. And so some of their people came to a training on how to study the Bible. And he was in the kitchen at the break, and this woman didn't know he was standing behind her, and she said, "Oh, this studying the Bible is so much work. I way prefer just getting a vision and going with it." And that church didn't last very long.
You know, even at the time of the 1500s and the 16th century and the Protestant Reformation that began, it wasn't normal at all for people, even monks, to even theologians, it wasn't normal for people to read the Bible. The Bible wasn't in the individual languages, it was just in Latin up till this point, most of the time. A few people had taken very brave steps to translate the Bible into their languages, and several of them were put to death for it. So the church didn't believe it was a good thing for people to read the Bible. What they did read was commentaries on the Bible. There were a few that most educated people have read, but they didn't. So they knew about Bible stories because they were talked about in churches and they were in the stained glass windows, but they didn't read the Bible. So one of the very, very great controversies in Martin Luther's life, even before he ends up becoming a famous reformer, is that he really fell in love with the Bible. It was speaking to him. And other people thought he was like a goody two-shoes, you know, that he was, they thought he was a holier than thou. And they made fun of him for being so involved with the Bible. You know, that's not, so actually most of Christian history, the Bible has not been that important. It's really quite important in the last few centuries. It's achieved a different kind of focus since the Protestant Reformation because so much emphasis was put on it. Before that, Christian living didn't depend on it the same way. Yeah.
I'm thinking there's kind of a paradox in your question, actually. Because if we really believe in verse 14, then if you're paying attention to the Spirit, well, you're paying attention to matter well. In other words, they're so inseparable that there's something broken in the question, because you can't pay attention to spirit and miss matter, because that's not paying attention to spirit. You can't pay attention to matter and miss spirit, because that means you're not paying attention to matter.
It's a wonderful question. Your question is this a legitimate question?
Yeah.
Yeah, because even to ask the question gets you into a world that leaves the perfect marriage behind.
Yeah.
It tries to separate. But it may be a necessary question,
yeah,
to try to see where the boundaries are. Yeah, it's really good. Have you ever, you know, I know in the old days we used to have a lot of people that were part of our community who had been in very heavily Pentecostal churches. In this area, there was a strong stream of churches called Jesus-only churches. And in this theology, it was quite legalistic. And the focus was very, very spiritual, but the way that it translated to people was a judgment if you wore the wrong thing. So there was quite a lot of that. I remember one person telling me that when she was about 14 years old, she was just begging God to give her the gift of speaking in tongues at an altar at a church service, because people didn't believe that you were a real Christian unless you had received this gift of speaking in tongues in her tradition. So she's begging God for a spiritual experience, and somebody tapped her on the shoulder. It was a pastor, and he asked her to come with him. He took her into his office, and he chastised her for wearing jewelry. How dare she be at the altar of God wearing a necklace? You know, fortunately, it wasn't any worse than that. Even as I set up this story, I thought the obvious conclusion to this is so dark. But it wasn't that. He was trying to do the thing that he thought was right. But matter was not important, only spirit. So he is exaggerating. He's doing his best intention, but following his best intention, but he's really doing a terrible thing, and left her with a terrible sense of shame for years and years and years, which God healed us later in life when she learned it just wasn't appropriate. Yeah, well, here's a question. The other side, what does it look like to have too great a focus on matter? In the church or in society? Yeah, Shin.
I think it negates the fact that there's more than just what we see here. Mm-hmm. You know, that there could be such a thing as miracles, there could be such a thing as God speaking to you, there could be such a thing as the gorgeous sunset that I saw on Facebook and this last night outside.
Second night in a row.
Yeah, that could be.
Oh, Carol, that would be
great. Yeah, that could be God speaking. Now, yeah. I mean, granted, that's matter, but it is more than just a sunset.
Yeah.
A beautiful sunset. There's a creator behind that.
And I think you're right. It's just such a sadness. It's like living life as a mannequin instead of a full human being. It's like, and even worse sometimes, it's like we get into our dark holes of complaint. We were talking last night about people we know sometimes who just get lost in so much depression and darkness, their whole world is a complaining until, I think, as C.S. Lewis would say, in the end, there's only the wine. I don't mean the W-I-N-E. In the end, there's only the W-H-I-N-E. In the end, there's only the wine. And so this would be, you know, to turn away from the flow of life, the flow of creativity, the flow of making. You know, if we have the Creator's life flowing from His heart, I would say through Jesus, through the Holy Spirit, through all of us, hopefully, in potential. That's my dream, is to see this, that we don't get lost in an eddy or in a stagnant pool, but that we flow with the life. That's the dream. And I think the John's Gospel is saying it can happen, that we can learn how to do this and we can do it better as we grow. So what a sadness to live without that flow. Now, how do we encourage each other to the best balance possible? How do we encourage each other to the marriage of word and spirit that we see in Jesus? That's my last question for today. How do we encourage each other toward the marriage of spirit and matter in our own lives?
Real place for grace to recognize that some people lean one way and some people lean the other way. Some people lean more into rationality and some people lean more into creativity. And so, yeah, give each other space and grace to experience God in the way that speaks most fully to them. So there has to be a marriage.
So I love what you're saying is, well, remember this in the Eugene Peterson quote? The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out. And you're saying we need to be generous because we're all different.
Yeah.
Some of us are going to tilt more towards rationality and some of us are going to tilt more towards intuition. Some of us are going to see God more in a sunset. Some of us are going to receive God's grace more through reading the Bible or listening to music. Or sometimes more in conversation. Or my favorite way of looking in the mirror. That's how I like to see God. I just look in the mirror. And I did this intentionally yesterday because I've joked about it so many times. But I did it intentionally. I just looked in the mirror and I saw life. And I saw a smile, and I saw satisfaction and joy and gratitude, and I saw all these things in my face, and I thought, that's all you. That's you, Lord. I love you. This is all you. All that's good in me. I see God in Peter.
Thank you.
I do. Yeah. I just think we're surrounded in God. Surrounded in joy, But the flow of the Spirit is joy, and the flow of the Spirit is resilience and strength and capacity to figure out a way forward even when things get hard. It's a, this flow of the Spirit is empathy. The flow of the Spirit is so deep. The flow of the Spirit is peace to quiet anxious minds.
I think it's just wonderful to be loved by God.
It's wonderful to be loved by God.
It is.
And the way that we most often feel that love is by encouraging each other. That's our greatest gig. Woohoo!
It's quite a revelation, eh, Peter, to come to the place of recognizing and realizing that God really does love
us. Yeah, it is. But we're on the right side.
Yeah.
I'm with you, man. Oh, so good. Okay, so that's it for thoughts today. I think we could think about this for books, and but like we could all write books about it. Where's the focus doing well? How are we blending them well, and how are we missing it? And trying to avoid the ditches and find that place where we're flowing with the Spirit in gratitude and joy and resilience and strength, but also in empathy and care and justice. It's what a beautiful thing. Jesus has shown us what it's like. And I believe we can do it too. And how fun when we do it together. So I'll give you my last little song that I've just written about this, out of this text.
Do you mind trying to bring this back?
Let's see if I can. There are the words. So I really kind of serious. If anybody else wants to start writing songs out of the text we're gonna look at every week, it's such a cool little exercise. Thank you. hearts to you. Was it all about sharing? Did you want something to love? You shine through everything you make. Fill it all with your love. Because art and making, in the various ways that we do it, are like expressions of imagination. And so in those moments, we're blending matter and spirit. Lord, we love you so much. I just thank you for your beauty expressed and all around us, in each other and in ourselves, and in the longing for a better world. So, help us to learn as best we can how to marry these beautiful things that you give us and to be that thing in the world. Amen.